Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, whatever the case may be, and welcome to This Month in Tech for February 20th. And I'm joined by a wonderful panel of folks to bring you This Month in Tech. First up is Rick Harmon. Rick manages various email lists related to blindness and technology. He also runs the Blind Geek Zone website and podcast since 2006. The site serves as portals to hundreds of free tutorials and demonstrations for the blind community. While he does the majority of these, he has selected high-quality submissions for others for inclusion. In 2007, Rick began offering paid training and support services, both in person in his local area, by phone, basically however Rick can train you. So Rick, welcome back.
Good evening. Thank you for having me here.
Janine Lineback also joins us. She hails from the great state of Texas. I don't know why everyone from the great state of Texas calls it the great state of Texas, but that is from where she hails. She obtained her bachelor's degree there. She's a certified access technology trainer and also has certifications, HTML and Cisco Information Technology Essentials. She has a very long bio, which will be posted in the show notes, but she has been an entrepreneur beginning at the university, has been a technology coordinator at the Colorado Center for the Blind in the 90s, has founded a company, Computer Concepts Plus, where she contracted with Voc Rehab as an assistive technology trainer, wrote JAWS scripts for private companies, and did a lot more stuff. Currently is involved also in AT training. Janine, welcome to the show.
Hi, everybody. It's good to be here. Thanks, Steve.
And last but certainly not least is a gentleman we've had on the show before as well. Joshua Loya is an assistant instructor at the Guardian Academy of Martial Arts in Spring Valley, California. Despite being completely blind since 1996, he's earned second degree black belts in two forms of karate that I cannot pronounce, so I'll let Joshua jump in and do that. But in addition to being an awesome guy and super fit, he is also an assistive technology trainer. Joshua, welcome to the show.
Hi, Steve. And glad to be here again. Just for clarification, that was Guardian Jiu-Jitsu, Guardian Karate, and Guardian Kobujitsu, which is a weapon style. And very glad to be here.
I have to say, we should do a show entirely on that. I realize it would be out of the purview of tech, but I don't know. It just would be interesting to talk to you at some point about, especially the weapons part. I think, you know, that would be fun.
I'd be glad to. Yeah, we can definitely explore that.
Well, folks, we have quite a packed show. A lot of things have happened this month or last month, as the case may be, including some CSUN audio feeds that have been posted, and so we'll get to all that. But our first story has to do with screenless mobile computers. Talking changes everything. That story coming to you in just a moment. I should also mention that Lisa is, of course, in the wings, and she is pushing documents this evening. So if you are in the chat, she'll be monitoring chat as well. So certainly say hi, and if you have any comments or whatever, feel free to post them in the chat and we will get to them as soon as possible. Anyway, this article talks about the fact that people are busy and people don't necessarily have time to look at their devices. And boy, wouldn't it be nice if we could talk to them. And the article talks about Siri and Google Voice, or not Google Voice, but Google's new voice search stuff as being sort of the beginners in this area. But people are thinking about, you know, how these devices might evolve and if they could be always on so that your device could be in a room and you just talk to it whenever you need. For example, one of the things it mentions is that you can't engage with your device while you're changing a baby. And I thought, well, that's probably true. Another area you might not be able to engage with a device, at least readily, is with the summer fast approaching. If you are grilling outside, say listening to a baseball game, cooking up some using or sausage or something, and have your hands covered in grease, kind of tricky to pick up your iPhone and fiddle around to get Siri to work. And so the idea that devices might be always on, ready to listen for your command is certainly appealing. What do people think about the idea that, not from an accessibility standpoint, but just because people aren't able to visually engage with devices, this speech control revolution, as it were, is sort of being driven?
I don't know. I think perhaps maybe we're a little bit too connected, but maybe that's just me.
It's kind of creepy.
Just a little. I mean, it's, you know, I like the idea that, because I've had that where I've had, you know, I've, in fact, that exact thing where I've been grilling or doing some sort of, you know, cooking thing and needed to answer a phone and that sort of thing. I didn't want to get my phone, even my earbuds, if I had them in, covered in grease or barbecue sauce, whatever it was. And so the convenience factor is nice. I don't know I don't have a son or daughter yet, but if I was changing my child's diaper, I think I'd rather focus on the task at hand. Just saying.
Having changed many diapers, it's dangerous to turn away even for a second, so I get the need to have that voice control. But
I did see a situation, though. I was in a women's restroom at a restaurant out on the highway. I was traveling with some friends, and a lady came in, and I heard voiceover, and I thought, oh, my God, there's another blind person in the middle of nowhere. And I didn't say anything because I didn't hear a cane or anything. And I came out to wash my hands, and she was already at the sink, and voiceover was just chattering away. And I said, may I ask, are you visually impaired? And she said, why would you think that? I mean, she had no idea that voiceover was used by visually impaired people. She said, no, I just listen to my phone all the time. Because I said, well, you're listening to your phone, and I do that because I can't see it. So that was interesting, kind of aside to the same kind of deal.
You mentioned one word, freaky, and one of the things that the article calls out, and I've seen this on my Android device. Google has a thing called Google Now, but the article references sort of a similar thing to this, is that the device will learn patterns and be able to give you information based on those patterns. For example, it might know when you leave for work, and so it might give you a traffic report before you leave. It might know roughly when you're going to go outside, so it gives you the weather report. And Google Now does this on Android, and it is totally freaky. You just turn it on, and it observes you for a couple of days, and then literally when I'm at the bus stop, it tells me when my bus is going to come because it knows the one I take, and tells me if it's delayed. If my wife drives me to work, it tells me the traffic conditions when it senses I'm not taking the bus route. It's really kind of weird how it kind of monitors me and knows what I'm doing. On the other hand, it's super handy, and it would be kind of neat in some instances, if you can overcome the freakiness factor, that the device will, you know, chime in with information that you might need to know based on your schedule or your routine or whatever. I don't know. What do people think?
I'm sure one of those would use it, but yeah, I think at first,
self-aware artificial intelligence? I don't know. I, for one, welcome our robot overlords.
Me too. I think that'd be kind of cool. You get used to it.
That's true. Yes, you would get used to it. But, you know, again, it's monitoring everything. It monitors where you go and what you're doing and that sort of thing. And, boy, if someone were to access that data, they would know my whole life.
Well, there is no such thing as privacy anymore. And
I'm over that.
I mean, I like the convenience, and that's the thing is, how do you temper it is probably the thing that would come up after a point.
Absolutely.
It's interesting that we talk about privacy so much. Maybe in 10 or 20 years, people will totally get that privacy was a thing of the past and think, geez, remember those days when we thought about privacy and with regard to that, one of the companies that's always in the news with regard to privacy is Facebook. And in fact, there is a study, an actual study, that says Facebook fatigue is a very real thing. According to the 1,006 people who were surveyed in the next article, which should be showing up in just a second, 61% responded that they had taken long breaks from the site. 21% were too busy, 10% were too busy, 2% lost interest, and 10% thought it was a waste of time. It amazes me that only 10% think it was a waste of time. I think it's a waste of time, but I haven't abandoned it yet, so I wonder what the stat is of people who think it's a waste of time. But people's comments were rather interesting. The reason they were Facebook fatigued included that Facebook had, quote, tired and stupid comments. I have crazy friends. It was boring. Too much drama. Don't like their privacy policy. See the tie-in right there? I have heard, I think, every one of those things from probably all of my friends at one point or another. Has anyone here experienced Facebook fatigue?
I avoid using it as much as possible.
I was going to say, I experienced it the first time I used it.
Go ahead.
Yes. Yes, that was me. I will keep my remarks limited because I've made them pretty well known on Serotalk. I just feel like we can't say lack of accessibility anymore, but the clunky accessibility and the fact that it's constantly changing, plus the drama, plus, oh, guess what? There were just 50 photos in a row on my timeline. Just makes it feel like a waste of time sometimes.
I guess for me, I've always disliked the fact that, you know, I don't, like with Twitter, you see the tweets as they come in. There's some order to the chaos, as it were. Where with Facebook, for me, it was just not only nonsense, but just sheer chaos constantly. And it was like, okay, I don't have time for this.
And there's so many rules with Facebook, you know, to get your post to show up in the timeline and stuff. You know, somebody has to like it, or people have to comment on it, or, you know, I've noticed the feed doesn't even have consistency in, you know, going backwards through it in a time order, and yep. It just makes it so chaotic.
Yeah, this is very interesting. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Joshua.
I was just going to say I think I'd probably like it more if there was a more streamlined interface.
And welcome back. We thank you for hanging in with us. We wanted to be able to show you documents for reference. We have some things especially coming up that might be of particular interest to you. And to do that, we had to restart things, and we will be basically picking up now. We'll turn it back over to Steve and pick up from where we left off and continue onward and upward. Thanks so much for staying with us.
Absolutely appreciate that, and it's great to be back. We were talking about the should Serotalk start a newsletter, and so would love to get your input and feedback on that. The document or the webpage for that should be pushed in just a moment. And there it is. And I'm getting confirmation here from the kind folks in the chat that we can be heard, so we are definitely back, and that is awesome. All right, in the mobile tech corner, iOS 6.1 brings back a bug that can give anyone access to your contacts, your photos, and anything else, even if you have your screen locked and the pin set. This is a bug that has cropped up a few times throughout the history of iOS, and basically, I'm not sure on the particulars of how you do this with iOS 6.1, but with the with the older versions, one of the things you could do is If you activate your lock screen, you can place an emergency call. And if you choose to do that, that activates the phone. And then from there, you can get into the contacts and essentially bypass the PIN. So there's been various variations on that technique. But I think also when Siri was out, there was a while where you could, at the lock screen, ask Siri to show contact information or show call history or something like that, and it would automatically present that and, again, bypass the lock screen. So this bug has, again, presented itself in iOS 6.1, or at least in similar fashion. Apple has released a statement that they are very concerned about the situation, and an update will be coming soon to address it. Does anyone have any thoughts about this iOS bug?
Is this still the crazy one that everybody's been a little, in my opinion, whacked out about, that you had to do, you know, press the certain sequence of things and then this other certain sequence of things and then this other certain sequence of things to
based
actually get
video,
it to happen?
Yeah. Based on the yeah. video that I watched, that it seems like you really do have to know, like, a very specific set of steps, and the guy was
That's
saying,
like,
if you're going to do this, you have to do it this way, and the planets have to be aligned, and, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, it's still a problem, because, you know, people shouldn't be able to get access to your data if you aren't meaning to do so, if they happen to already have stolen your phone or picked up your phone or whatever. I don't think it's quite as easy to get access to that stuff now as it was in the, what is it, 2.0 bug or what it was originally?
Yeah, they said it was a lot easier.
That it is easier now or that it was easier then?
No, I'm sorry. It was much easier, I guess, back in iOS 2. And
right.
when it come back in 4.1 and come back in 6, it got progressively more difficult to do it. You know, you had to jump through all of these hoops to make it happen. But still, I guess it's a problem.
I agree it's a problem, but I do think people have gone a little maybe over the top about it. I just want to know who had all the time to figure out all the steps it took to get to do it in the first place, but
maybe
it's
a disgruntled Apple engineer that worked on the process that, you know, slipped the code back in or something.
Could be, yeah.
Can make you wonder.
I think the real thing, the real concern, though, is as people start using these devices more and more in corporate and enterprise environments, where you have a lot of confidential data, maybe customer
corporate
data and that sort of stuff in the device.
Be a real important thing. Yeah, I've seen that actually.
Yeah, that's true, and there is the HIPAA law, so they use it in medical facilities a lot, and this could create issues with Apple as far as device sales to those kinds of places, so it's important.
Definitely.
Especially now, where people are actively looking for BlackBerry alternatives, and obviously Apple being a popular
RIM
one.
Might actually have, if RIM can exploit this. In fact, perhaps this news story was a plant by RIM. Anybody think of conspiracy theorist over here?
You're listening to Controversy Corner. Yes, it's entirely possible. Who knows?
It would make things more interesting if it was, I got to tell you.
True.
Well, not only does this hack sort of threaten Apple a little bit, but Samsung is doing its part to take down the awesomeness that is Apple. They have attempted to block the iPhone function for the blind, otherwise known as a voiceover, in a patent suit filed in Germany. The Korean mobile manufacturer is maintaining that voiceover violates its patents. And This has already been resolved. I don't know. I guess we have to keep you hanging till next month in tech when we can tell you the outcome of this. But
do you know what the resolution there was, Steve? I didn't follow up, actually.
I do. We'll have to mention
it. We can't tell anybody.
But it is scary in a way. I mean, they felt this was a violation of some of their patents, and I don't know, voiceover, it was part of it, and another part was the ability to triple-click the home button. The triple-click home functionality was...
Yeah, if that went away, that would be very frustrating, I'd say.
It was
that
both
was something
the
else
triple-click
about.
Home, and it was the speaking of status and other items on the display.
This article that I saw about it. It seemed to me that this was only going to apply to people in Germany. Now, of course, we wouldn't want it to happen anywhere because it could be extended and that would just start a big landslide for us in the blind and visually impaired community that rely on voiceover especially. One of the things that really struck me in the article is, you know, one of the reporters says, you know, if they had just asked for monetary compensation, that would have made a whole lot more sense. This was like,
yeah,
you know,
I think that
Samsung.
Was all things D, if I remember right.
Yeah, absolutely was. It, you know, it was like them socking themselves in the face, basically.
That's not good PR.
And they were kind of put in a tight spot. I mean, like this whole stupid battle back and forth. I mean, like, I don't know. Maybe they could have gone for another tactic. It just did somebody's PR department not go, hey guys. You know, hey, you're about to do this stupid thing. You might want to stop it. You might not want to do this.
It's in the chat, Mike Arrigo has commented that Apple isn't totally blameless in this, in that they started the war between themselves and Samsung by filing patent disputes. And so the patent war has been going on for quite a while between the two and is not going to end anytime soon. So this is just sort of another piece of a much larger pie. And it's kind of interesting. There's a debate sort of evolving in the chat around that. And I see Mike's point. I mean, neither company is blameless, but you gotta wonder. I mean, as was just said, from a PR perspective,
right?
Seriously,
yeah.
Guys, like, you couldn't attack the color that Apple used to the glass or some such thing. I don't know.
And even if you're gonna take like a warfare analogy, I mean, like, what are you gonna go like? Purposely, you know, shoot missiles on a bunch of civilians in order to win the war. Like, I mean, it's a bit of a class. You know, it's like you're going to marginalize an entire group of people for the sake of winning
your
contest that you have with Apple. Because a lot of it, this is a big ego contest, you know, half the time. And granted, there are some legitimate monetary concerns and concerns for the future of each company. A little bit of tact would be nice, but maybe that's asking too much.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Josh, because I personally think this whole patent thing with computers really needs to be dealt with at a whole nother level as far as, you know, reforming the laws that exist and making them come into align with current practices in software and technology development, and that just hasn't happened, and so it's a big, huge mess, but going after a group of people to win your battles seems a little bit below the belt to me.
I agree.
Well, they're down a billion, right? I mean, maybe it's a desperation move. I don't know. Or like, who knows what
Samsung
goes through the mind.
I admire your effort to defend Samsung there, Steve.
Yeah.
It's his weakness.
You might have to try a little harder, though.
Yeah.
I admit it's weak, but so is that. I wonder if they'll ever disclose the name of the person who said, hey, you guys, I got a great idea. Let's do this.
They're probably not there anymore.
I would venture some termination papers were filed. Just a hunch.
And I bet it was legal people. I just can't imagine that they even consulted PR. I would have to believe that this was some lawyer's bright idea, not thinking the PR effect through it all.
One thing I do want to mention is that if you're listening to us through the podcast, we definitely appreciate it. But if you tune in, live, the Accessible Event platform that brings you the show every month has a few interesting components to it. Of course, the voice feature you're hearing now, but you also can see web pages as they're pushed to people who are listening live. And there is the chat component. Obviously, we don't read all of the messages that come through the chat, but this is certainly a hot topic, which is why I'm mentioning it. The chat is fully accessible in your web browser or through iBlink Radio, and it's really interesting to kind of monitor and see what people are talking about. A lot of opinions going back and forth, all very relevant, and really, really, I that enhances the experience. So if you haven't gotten a chance to tune in live, give it a shot if you can free up an evening during the show. And it's very easy to use. It's all web-based. And, yeah, it's neat. You can participate through the chat in a way you probably never thought you could. It's really neat. So, anyway, you'll also have to come next month to hear the result of the patent dispute. yeah, it's scary a patent, yes, we need a sound effect here, but it is scary that a patent dispute, shall we say, skirmish, that sounds better, a patent skirmish, could remove accessibility. It could remove the ability for us to use our Apple iThings, and that's I never realized how vulnerable it could possibly be. You know, I hear about all these patent disputes going back and forth, and I think, oh, this doesn't affect me. This doesn't affect me. I don't care. But then this one, boy, sure hits close to home. Something you depend on is challenged. So I know going forward, I'm certainly going to tune into the patent disputes and that sort of thing. Navigation and travel. On the Android side of things, APH, the American Printing House for the Blind, has introduced Nearby Explorer, an Android app. It's a GPS-enabled app for the blind. It is really neat. I have purchased it and absolutely love it. I'll stop talking, and what do other people think about this? The article should be showing up for everyone in a second.
Well, I haven't played with it much, mostly because I don't have an Android device other than, get some time on a Nexus and occasionally. I think it's awesome, though, that there's more choice now, and that's the biggest thing, is that there is choice, that you're not stuck just using a Navigon or TomTom or whatever it is. You have this other choice that addresses a lot of the concerns that we have, as mostly pedestrian travelers, have, and there was obviously a need for it, I'd say.
I've purchased it here on the for the Nexus 7 as well, and it's quite an interesting app. It does a lot of the things that we definitely need. I had a little bit of issues with it here, but I think it's just maybe some GPS accuracy and things like that. But overall, it's a nice app.
And I actually have not used it. I did see a demo at CSUN last week of it, and it looked like it would be a pretty nice thing to have. I do not have an Android device at this time. Hoping to get a Nexus 4 phone in the near future, though. So at that point, I'll be trying it out.
Comments are pretty positive about the app. No one is saying, geez, I bought it and I hate it. People in the chat are responding positively to it. I really like it. It's got some neat, innovative features, including this one feature called, I think it's called GeoBeam, and basically it allows you to point your device in a direction, and it'll tell you what's in that direction. So if you're standing, say, downtown, and you point it around, it will tell you what buildings you're pointing at. And it may not be super accurate depending on how accurate your GPS is and how close the buildings are and that sort of thing. But if you just want to know kind of what's over there, where are all those people going in and out of, you could point toward that and it might give you some results based on where you're pointing it. Really an innovative idea, in my opinion. And it's got a lot of other features and functionality as well. It's priced at, I think it's $99, and you can read the manual that APH has published. The manual details, of course, all of the features of the app and how to use them, and it really is an interesting concept, very customizable, so you can really adjust it to your particular needs. It also leverages Google Maps to a degree, and the ability for users to create using Google Local points of interest. And if another user has Google Local enabled, they can pick up on those points of interest. So as you wander around and find things that might be useful for others to know, you can add those to a publicly accessible database, and others can access that as well. So leveraging some additional Google technology there. So, very exciting stuff. Sendero has also posted some sessions from CSUN, which is the huge tech conference that happens every year. All kinds of new things are announced and products are shown. It's like the tech mecca, as it were, for accessible technology. It takes place in California. It just ended, and Sendero posted about their Seeing Eye GPS demos. There are some podcasts on this, but their product will work for iOS and is also a GPS product. It sounds very exciting. I haven't seen anything official yet from Sendero on it, but there are quite a few podcasts, one of which I think we have the page for here, and definitely a lot of anticipation around it in the iOS community. Any thoughts about the Seeing Eye GPS app from Sendero, which is not out yet, by the way? It's coming soon.
I'll echo my earlier comments about there being more choice, and again, the fact that we have more choices for getting access to the information we need and the form that we need. The more choice we have, the better.
One thing the Sendero one may not have, according to what I'm reading here in the chat, is the virtual exploration. So, depending on whether that's important or not, that may matter, and it may change. Who knows? The product hasn't been released yet. It's been announced, so everything is subject to change with regard to the Seeing Eye app before its release. But, you know, it's great. It's great we have choice. And this, of course, will also be customized to work for the blind, so giving us additional information that other iOS apps tend to not give us. I love, again, looking through the chat, some people... What's that?
I think Rick had a comment, actually.
Go for it.
Oh, I was just going to say the only real concern I had about it, I listened to... Sendero talk about it last week at CSUN. The only problem I kind of had with it is, these apps are a little pricey. I understand that. The APH app is $99, but that's just one fee of $99. What I've heard from Sendero is... It may be something like $99 for a year, and you basically would be renting it.
How is APH dealing with the maps, though? I haven't seen anything on what they're planning to do with maps update. Do you have to buy the updates, or are those free for life? Does anyone know?
Yeah, that would be an interesting question to get the answer to.
I don't think anybody's ever said.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the APH is, going back to the APH thing, I think theirs is only for North America, which I've heard some criticism of by a few of my international friends. The thing is, it is the American printing house for the blind, so naturally their GPS app is going to be a little bit North American-centric. But perhaps
that's true, and I think they've only licensed the map data for North America at this
right.
Right.
That
is correct.
The people who would criticize that, it's like, well, they're not the Australian printing house for the blind, and they're not the European printing house for the blind. I mean, you know, just to be fair.
Someone is, Robert is commenting in the chat that no one gives maps away for free, and that's true. I mean, they are using these under license. I mean, they don't get them for free. They can't provide them for free. So, APH might be a $99 one-time fee, but there may be additional fees for updating the maps in the future, and we don't know what those are, and they may not know what those are, depending on the licensing costs that they incur when they do this. And I don't know how such things are factored, but I don't know. I mean, $99 a year.
I understand.
At least
that,
you know what it is. You know,
right.
If you know what it is, you can budget for it or figure it out. I think that's going to be good versus not knowing exactly what the.
But my
maps
issue is
that cost.
That Navigon charges you for maps every 2 years, and it's like $20. you know, the GPS.
Then again, also has a larger market base.
But still.
It'll be interesting to see.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. So.
And, you know, as mentioned, these just work in North America for right now. So what will happen when they add additional regions, and what will those cost? And, I mean, the exciting thing, I think, is that, you know, as has been mentioned, there are options. If you're an iOS user, if you're an Android user, you will have options available to you. And that's very, very exciting. So good luck also to Sendero, and looking forward to the release and additional information around the Seeing Eye app coming hopefully soon. I don't know if we have a release date yet, but coming soon. In the GPS vein, iMove is a free GPS app that has been released. It's an app for the blind, and it's got a bunch of interesting features to it. You can know what address, you know, the address you're near. You can find out what points of interest are around you, for example, schools and stations, whatever. You can also record speech notes associated with your location, and then when you get close to that location again, your speech note will be played back. You can customize the messages. For example, you can choose to be warned about the address where you're at, your current orientation and speed, speech notes, points of interest, etc. The app will work even if it's in the background, which is kind of neat. And again, it's free. Anyone have thoughts or comments on this one?
Yeah, I've played around with that.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I've played around with it a little bit, and it's very nice. It's kind of like Sendero Look Around on steroids in a way, and it uses the Google Maps information and stuff, and it seems to be very, very accurate, and it's really neat.
Again, I love we have options. I think it's great. If people don't need a full-fledged GPS app but just need some functionality, this may suffice for a great many people. Any thoughts, Janine? Do you have people who've asked you about this yet? Have we lost?
Hopefully not.
Janine, we might have lost Janine.
We might have lost her.
Well, Janine, if you're still there, go ahead and just interrupt me. Otherwise, I'll keep going. anyway, it's out now, so you can find it in your friendly app store. Also, I don't know that it is restricted to North America. It doesn't say. So if you are not in North America, it might work. I don't know that it does or doesn't, but it's free. So try it out. Let me know. It would be very curious. In the meantime...
Oh, I was just going to say, it uses Google Maps and Google information. So my guess is it's probably not restricted.
Yeah, that might be very handy.
Yeah, maybe a nice backwards way to get some information that, no longer in the Apple Maps, but you might be able to quickly get the some of that Google Map data again.
I also find it slightly ironic that the free app is less likely to be restricted internationally than the pricier GPS apps. I know there's licensing and whatever involved, but it just seems odd that the less you pay, the more you get in terms of international map coverage. If traveling is not your thing, or all this GPS stuff just confuses or baffles you, there's a new word game out. Letter Clever is a new word game that has been released. I fail at all of these word games, but others do really well with them. Often I get asked to play them because it's an easy win for someone. So if you are into word games, Letter Clever might be a way you can beat me or possibly play with someone a little more challenging than me.
Steve,
has anyone
play after the show?
Used this yet? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we could play during the show. It won't be hard. You'll win really quick. Has anyone used this yet?
No.
I haven't played with it yet. It looks kind of interesting, though. I mean, good company to come from. I mean, the same people who made Stem Stumper, I believe, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and right now the game is in beta. which is why. However, an exciting bit of information is that the plan, anyway, is when it is released, to release it for both iOS and Android. And there will be some competition so you can play it in a hanging with friends kind of interface.
Nice.
So you'll be able to play against Android players or iOS players. Maybe we can do an informal poll and find out at some point who are the better word gamers, iOS or Android. Could be fun.
Well, I'll be the great equalizer. I'll fail on both platforms. I'm sure of it. I have faith in my abilities. Yeah, although I have to say, there certainly are more games, it seems, that are accessible for iOS over Android at this point. There's a few that have cropped up on Android, but there are not as many as there seem to be for iOS. So it is nice that having one that'll work across both platforms. That'll be, I think, a big boost to people who are playing around with Android but missing the ability to play word games and other things that could help in the art of time wasting. By the way, speaking of time wasting, the Facebook app for Android works pretty good. Remember that earlier story? Anyway, Looktel has released a voiceover tutorial app, which will help new iOS users become more familiar with the features and functions of voiceover, more specifically the gestures that voiceover uses. Looktel is famous for its money identifier stuff, and they have now released this. I believe it's free. Is that still true? It was free. I don't know if it was introductory free or if it was permanently free, but definitely great for someone who's struggling with iOS gestures or just new to the iOS environment and needing some extra assistance with learning all of that.
Well, if it is permanently free, it's a nice alternative to VO Starter, which is another similar app which I have purchased for use with my clients.
Yeah, I'm looking to see if I can quickly confirm I can't, whether it's free or not, but you're right, it's very similar in terms of functionality to the VO Starter app that was out a while ago.
It did look like, though, from the description that they've also included some voiceover-based games, and, you know, I've always found that if you can make learning fun, that and kind of remove some of that intimidation factor, you know, especially for, you know, people who are new to assistive technology in general, you know, the presentation might actually be more of a pleasant experience overall. And that could be, even if it is, say, the same price or something, it might actually still be a better option for trainers to use with their clients.
Definitely exciting, and I definitely am looking forward to IT and AT trainers using this app to train students. It's always fun when you can incorporate games, and it's not just straight learning, but fun learning. Definitely exciting. The next story is one that everyone has been waiting for forever and ever and ever. Ladies and gentlemen, the Bard mobile app is coming. Yes, it has been shown at CSUN. It's an alpha. There are some podcasts about it. If you are a Bard subscriber, Bard, for those that don't know, is the Talking Book Library's digital collection in North America, or in the U.S., I should say. The Bard stuff currently works on assistive devices such as the Victor Reader Stream and the BookSense and things like that, but it doesn't work on iOS. And now they have announced an upcoming app. The Bard mobile app is coming. You can listen to some CSUN interviews and podcasts about it. And my understanding is it's coming for iOS and Android, which will be really exciting. This has been huge. People have wanted this for years, literally, and access to the huge, huge mega collection of audio offered by Bard on a mobile device is just going to be beyond awesome, whatever word is for that.
It also includes the Web Braille collection, I believe, actually, based on the one demonstration that I heard.
Yeah,
so
I heard that, too.
How that's implemented, if that means that there's a BRF reader included, this might be the first BRF reader that I'm aware of for iOS, unless I'm missing something.
Yeah, they didn't say, did they? They I don't know if they had a Braille display hooked up to it while they were doing that, or if they weren't real.
Yeah.
But, clear that, on that.
That was if they're able to implement that. That's a nice extra little bonus. In the one podcast I heard, it sounds like the development cycle is a little bit further on in the iOS department. So it sounds like Android people might have to wait a little bit longer, possibly.
I heard that too.
But the interface, based on just even the alpha stage, I mean, the fact that you can jump to the different articles in a magazine, and we get textual descriptions of things. And it sounds like they really put a lot of effort into this, which is great, because I was working with the library system 2 years ago, and I had patrons coming in all the time. Can I put this in my iPhone? And I had to kind of say, well, not yet. Not yet. I was like a little bit of a broken record there. So now I can definitely say it's coming, which is very cool to be able to say.
I've been saying it for years. I think what's nice is that there's actually been a sighting of the app. People have seen the alpha at CSUN. It's one thing to say it's
only
coming
Apple has
soon.
More secrecy, right?
What's that?
Only Apple has more secrecy.
I think that might be true. It might even be debatable. Yeah.
There were a lot of people out there that I've run across on some of the mailing lists that didn't even believe that this app was in existence or was coming out.
Yeah.
So this podcast should silence all of that. I can't wait for it myself.
I was starting to lose faith. I've heard for so long that, we're hoping to release it within the next 6 months. Oh, we're working on it. Yeah, we're going to have it. I was beginning to think, they're just
part of it is they
kidding.
Did get a new... There was a change in the leadership of the National Library Service. The previous director was a little bit hesitant to have any mainstream device have anything access to BART content, and with the new director, that attitude has shifted from the top down, and that has a lot to do with this getting put forward on a much faster pace.
Can you guys hear me? I made it back.
Yo, you're back.
Hey, welcome back.
I don't know what happened. Everything just suddenly crashed, and I actually had to reboot. It's called technology, guys.
Welcome back.
When it works, it works. When it doesn't, that's what it
just
is.
Just start over. But I wanted to chime in about this app. I kind of was starting to feel like it was vaporware also, and then it was really, really nice. I saw the Blind Access Journal crew right after they did the spot with Judy Dixon, and they were so excited and, just to kind of be the first on the scene, but also the fact that it was real, because we were all starting to wonder. I had heard the spot on... what is the podcast that was Viewpoints, but it's changed its name, Eyes on Success. I had seen Judy Dixon's little presentation on there, but there wasn't a demo, and this was actually a demo, so that was very nice.
There's also, I've heard on a number of podcasts, a number of very prominent podcasts in the blind community and access tech realm, if you will, saying that the time for BARD is over on this one, on the Saratoga Podcast Network and others too, and people who I genuinely respect, and I have to say that I have in my work at Braille Institute, we have people in their 70s and 80s learning how to use an iPad, and they're one of the things is for somebody in that age, and even for myself, having more options of access to books. Until we have complete access to this stuff, it's not time for BARD to go away just yet. It'll take a few more years, and that still doesn't solve the whole library thing. So the fact that we still have access to this is an important thing. I know a little rabbit trail, little rant there, so to speak, but I think it's an important thing.
I think it's important, though, Josh, because the way I feel is similar to you. And, when they take the library away for my sighted family members, then they can take BART away.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I'm at.
That hasn't happened.
That is exactly my mindset on this, too.
I think the app will help, too. Maybe even help BARD to an extent, because it costs at least some amount of money to distribute all of these talking devices. And with an app out, a mainstream app out, that could, like you said, could be run on an iPad, an iPod Touch, a iPhone, an Android tablet, an Android phone, this, you know, I was also thinking this could really reduce some of their costs. I know it's going to cost money to produce the apps, but once the apps are produced, then, you know, it's, you know, it's basically free. Do you agree with that?
There's something to be said for that. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense to me, actually.
Well, stay tuned. We don't have any timeline, and I'm getting a don't quote me, but there's someone who I can't quote. I shouldn't quote. I'm tempted, though, because this is really sad.
I'm going to take a wild prediction here. You can quote me if you want, Steve. I'm going to bet you that it's going to be released during the NFB and ACB conventions.
Oh,
that would be a wise bet.
Yeah,
that's what it said in the interview, actually. They kind of
You're giving away my secrets there, Jimmy. Come on now.
No, the quote that I'm not quoting was that there's some speculation that the Android version might not come out right off, that the iOS version may come out
Judy actually said that.
Did she say that?
Yeah, she said they don't even have an Android app to work with yet.
Yeah, they don't have the app to release yet. So they're
blasphemy. That's terrible.
But that's pretty much been the trek. I mean, that's what happened with the ReachGo app and the Learning Ally app.
Well, there's a larger iOS user base, at least in the blind community. Even if Android is very widely used.
It's changing, though. It's been the case,
and so that's probably why the trend.
True.
Well, if you're an Android user, folks, I apologize. This is very sad news indeed, and that's my unfortunate duty to bring that to you. But anyway, thanks very much, anonymous person, for bringing that to my attention. I shall now mute myself and cry. Speaking of crying, which has to do with the eye, the FDA has approved the first bionic eye for a, quote, rare disorder. I don't know how rare something has to be for it to be classified as such, but for folks with advanced RP, retinitis pigmentosa, there is a new bionic eye that the FDA has improved. It takes the place of retinal cells, and the thing is, the article mentions that it won't restore sight, but it may allow the patient to see light and dark. And I thought, well, why? I don't know. I mean, if that's all it does, you can purchase a gadget for $10 that will sense light and dark, or if you have an iOS device, you can get one for almost
for free.
That will do the same thing. I have to hope that this device does more than just that, but the article seems to say that that's what it does. It'll allow them to see light and dark. And
if I'm going under the knife, I want more than that.
That's been my thing about all these devices that they've had for the eye, you know, that they call quote unquote bionic. None of them have allowed you to see more than a few hundred pixels of vision, and you know, I guess that's great if you have nothing like myself. But to go under the knife, like you said, and have things done like that to you for those kinds of money, I want Steve Austin vision.
Yeah, if they could invent a Wi-Fi chip at the same time, so you could just connect right from your head to your local
area
network, that'd be all right.
Although I will say that I recall when I read this article that it alluded to that there were some people who had gotten a little bit more vision and been able to see shapes and objects and things moving, and even some color. But again, if you're going to cut on me, I want to be able to see a lot more than that. But I do think maybe for some people, I guess it's a step forward in that whole realm of connecting things to the brain.
Yeah, it's definitely an advancement towards that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what was more interesting to me.
I think the other thing that's interesting is that the FDA has approved this, and the FDA is notoriously slow for approving anything.
Yeah, this is actually the first one that they've done.
Yeah.
So I guess that means the technology is way further advanced than this.
Because you weren't going out of the country.
So
you had to go to Portugal if you needed this before, I think it was.
Yeah,
that's right.
So that's exciting. I mean, it's clearly a good signal that there are advances in this area, which is neat. And if the FDA is proving this today, I think I read somewhere that they're like 10 years behind. I don't know how true that is. So
that sounds about right. I had an eye surgery that ultimately didn't work, which is probably one of the reasons I'm a guest here. Had been developed about 10 years prior to actually me getting the surgery, and it was, you know, not quite even approved at the time, or was just barely approved, I think. And it was about a 10-year time frame, so that sounds about right. At least that's what it was in the 90s anyway.
Now, did you say before that you had to go to, was it Brazil or Portugal to get this?
Portugal, I think it was. It was Portugal,
yeah, Portugal.
I believe. And this was maybe 10, 11 years ago. They had a... there was a big rap stories about this thing where, you know, you wore these glasses and they... This is less invasive, though. That's the one thing I have to say about this. This only goes into your retina. This particular device, about 10, 11 years ago, was actually... they would put electrodes in your visual cortex.
Yes, that's right.
And so it was a considerably more invasive surgery. So that's one thing I will say is that while the actual vision you're getting doesn't seem like it's improved that much from then, because there's also an Israeli company that's doing a similar thing to the one that they highlighted, the actual surgery is less involved. So worst case scenario on this, it looks like you might have to have your eyes actually removed. But the other one, if you have anything involving brain surgery go bad, well, that's a little bit more high stakes, if you ask me.
Yeah, that's the one the Dobell Institute was sponsoring, I believe, there, Josh. And yeah, it was pretty invasive.
It was like almost $100,000 for the surgery, if I remember right, too.
That's correct. That's the one I'm thinking of.
That's something you could do in your living, that's for sure. Well, if an eye that can't see that well is not your thing, then perhaps a bionic hand that can feel might be. There is also a new bionic hand that can feel. So this is very, very exciting, that article being pushed out here in just a second. Thoughts?
We are living in the future.
Does it have Kung Fu grip?
Yeah, Kung Fu grip, exactly, yeah.
Well, I think that the both of these articles are exciting because they show the advancements that are being made. And, you know, like Greg Kurzweil says, technology grows exponentially, and I think exactly that's what we're living.
Yeah, because this hand, it said that it'll be actually hooked into your nervous system. You'll actually be able to feel on multiple levels, just like you had a real hand. And, yeah, that's incredible. Just think, you know, if they come out with prosthetic legs and stuff that, you know, work the same.
Yep.
Well, look at Oscar Pistorius. Forget the murder charges, but before that.
I wasn't going to bring him up, but you're welcome. You know, or thank you, Jimmy.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So how long before someone...
legs.
How long before someone makes a device, going back to our earlier story, that will let you feel the drama that your friends on Facebook experience?
Oh, no. That's bad.
No, thank you.
This could be taking things to an entirely new level.
I'm thinking it might maybe let you slap your drama
queens. Drama queens. Slap your drama queens. Yeah.
Actually, the thing that came to my mind first was... Yeah. Would the app, or would the app, too many apps, would the bionic hand allow you to read Braille? Would it? Is it that
I thought
sensitive?
That, too. I totally thought
I did
of that.
Said too, actually.
It said its fingertips, all of its fingertips could feel, and it said it in the article it could feel pinpricks, so.
Wow.
I would think
who knows? Who knows?
It would be interesting.
Especially on a Braille display. You know, I often saw in the rehab centers where we had students that maybe weren't so able to read Braille well on paper, but they could use a nice Braille display quite well.
Well, yeah, because Braille displays typically are much firmer.
That's right,
you don't
sharper.
Have to worry about smushing, smushing mm-hmm. Braille cells as much as you might paper by pressing down too
totally
hard.
Wish we could insert the Inspector Gadget theme song right here.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Go Gadget eyes that can't see very well, and a hand that can feel.
Go Gadget hand.
Well, hey,
that
you
can
know what? This is perfect, because if you have eyes that can't see very well, but you have a hand that reads Braille, you're halfway there.
You're good to go.
Yeah, you're halfway there.
You just need the Facebook slapper.
That's an in-app purchase, there, Steve.
Yeah, in-app.
That's a $99 per year upgrade.
That's right.
And you're going to. And you're going to launch it by using your Google glasses that actually end up gives you the vision. Yeah.
Yes. All kinds of options. It's an exciting be alive, isn't it? Yes. Well, if you aren't into bionics, but you would be into an iPad Mini, you have an opportunity to win by completing the Cerotech survey, which is coming up. And Lisa, maybe you could tell us a little more about the Cerotech survey and the iPad Mini that one might be able to win.
Well, it is pretty exciting. We have launched the survey as a way to find out more about people who are using blindness-specific assistive technology, and the survey is, of course, very screen reader accessible. It's simple, it's painless. I didn't time it, but I would say it should take about 10 minutes to complete, maybe. Definitely worth it for the double motivations of letting your voice be heard, and also for possibly winning that iPad Mini. Also, a lot of the stories that we covered tonight were related to CSUN, which is the California State University at Northridge Conference on Disabilities. And if you would like to hear more coverage of CSUN, we definitely invite you to tune in. There is lots of coverage, and there's lots of ways to hear it. You can listen via the iBlink app, which is proudly available on iPhone and Android. There you go, Steve. I'm handing you a virtual tissue, my friend.
I appreciate it.
We also have a link where you can listen on the web. And if you are a member of SAMNet, you can listen there as well. Look for the link under the socializer. So that's what's going on. We encourage you to take our survey. And the winner will be announced in April. No fooling.
So just about the time that you won't be able to log into Windows Live Messenger, you'll be able to log into iMessage on the iPad Mini if you win it. So the perfect timing, I have to say.
Actually, it's just a little bit earlier, because it's April 8th, I believe. I already went and did the survey because I want my iPad Mini. And it was about 10 minutes, and April 8th is when the winner will be announced. And so that gives you just the right amount of time to learn how to use iMessage before Messenger goes away.
Well, folks, it has been an absolute delight bringing you this month in tech. I'd like to thank all of our guests this evening and give them an opportunity to provide any contact information. Of course, this will also be in the notes, and then we will perhaps have some closing remarks from that before we let you go this evening. But in no particular order, Joshua, thanks for joining us this evening.
Yeah, thank you. If anybody wants to learn a little bit more about me, Servant Warrior on Twitter, and I post both technical things and not so technical things. I do promise I'm able to speak well, and I've definitely enjoyed being here.
And Rick?
Sure. You can get a hold of me. Basically, the catch-all is now The Blind Geek Zone, www.blind-geek-zone.net, and you can go to the comments page, and you can shoot me a quick message there, and I'll be happy to get back to you.
Okay. And last but not least, I will turn off my mute button. Apparently that works better if I turn it off. Janine, thanks for joining us.
Hi, everybody. Bye, everybody. If you want to reach me, I'm at JLineback on Twitter. That's probably the quickest way to get a hold of me. And that's JLineBack for anyone who might not know quite how to spell that. I have one comment. I don't want Saratech to do a newsletter because I get too many already, and I read my news mostly on Twitter. But if Saratech does one, I bet I read it. Good night.
Absolutely. If Saratech does it, it'll be done well. That's one thing we can all rest assured of. And I am Steve Sawson, your crazy host of This Month in Tech. I can be reached on Twitter, if you are so inclined, at Steve of Maine. Steve, OFMAINE, like the state. I'm from Maine, even if I'm living in Minnesota. I just haven't changed it. So feel free to seek me out there. I'm also in Facebook if you want to have some more anguish and drama in your life from someone who is crazy. Feel free to find me if you dare. And email is steve@sawson.com. It's my last name. You're going to want this from the show notes, but it's steve@saw, C as in Charles, Z as in zebra, Y as in yellow, N as in November. And with some closing remarks, I shall turn it over to Lisa. Thanks, everyone, for joining, and we'll see you next month for another edition of This Month in Tech. Lisa?
You know, Steve, when we've talked about this Twitter name thing, you know, we've thrown around the name Minnesota, and I thought of you, actually, because this past month, when Maine got, what was that, 3 feet of snow? I really thought, if there's any time that he changes his name from Steve of Maine to Steve of anything else, it will be then. So we'll have to stay tuned to Twitter to see what he does next. So if you would like to follow Saraspectives, you are welcome to do so. We try to kind of really tweet from a place of common ground. We have some techie stuff, some health stuff, some not especially techie, some a little bit of amusing. We try to inform you to hit the highlights, and so you are more than welcome to follow us there. That is Saraspectives, SeraSpectives on Twitter. You can also download this and our other podcasts using your favorite podcatching software, or you can go to sarotalk.com. Finally, we invite you to join us if you have a membership in SAMNet. People gather after these to chat in the tech chat room to slice and dice all the things that we've discussed and some others too. So if you are a SAMNet member, you are welcome to join us. If you are not a SAMNet member and you would like to check us out, you can start a free 7-day trial by going to www.sa2go.com. That's SA like system access, TOGO.com. So we look forward to seeing you there, and we look forward to talking to you next month when we bring you Saraspectives, This Month in Technology.